May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
My name is Kellen Lynch, and I am the campaign manager for Housing Solutions Network, a local nonprofit focused on housing education, advocacy, and networking. For this debut housing episode of Attention Please, we'll look at what work is being done about our local workforce housing crisis, and we'll hear stories from two guests, a new member of the Port Townsend City Council, as well as the fire chief for East Jefferson County. Housing Solutions Network sits in a unique position in our community. We are a responsive housing network that aims to be a platform for individuals and organizations to work collaboratively on various housing solutions. Our work is fueled by a few dozen extremely dedicated volunteers and a lean staff of just three that work collaboratively and creatively to cultivate housing resources and housing champions. We exist to provide a platform for our impassioned community members to work together and create meaningful change. It is important to note here that Housing Solutions Network focuses entirely on workforce housing solutions. Workforce housing is defined as the housing that is available and affordable to those earning about the area median income. The reason that HSN has identified this as a critical need is because there are already a number of local agencies and nonprofits dedicated to other aspects of the housing continuum. We have nonprofits like Bayside Housing, Dove House, Peninsula Housing Authority, OLECAP, and Habitat for Humanity, serving different people at different income levels. When you look at what areas are already being served, it tends to dwindle once folks make about the area median income. However, the need for housing does not diminish. What we have noticed is that even those with well-paying jobs, even earning up to six figures, are unable to afford housing in our area. Another way that HSN stands apart from these organizations is in our relationship building across the board with our community. We invite in both individuals and government, institutions and companies to work with us and consider ways that we can work on housing together. So while we neither build homes directly nor manage housing clients, we act as the bridge for information and action for people looking to create housing solutions. And just what is our housing situation? Well, it's a weird one to be sure. Let me explain. There is both a general lack of housing inventory at any price and a severe lack of available housing to rent or buy that is affordable for our local workforce. This reality threatens the health and vitality of our community and is thus an issue that we all need to be engaged in helping solve. The demand for a home in our market has been increasing since before the start of the pandemic. One of the strange dynamics in our local housing market is that we have a surprising number of units that sit empty either all year long or for long periods of time. According to the 2020 census data, there are over 3,300 chronically vacant homes in all of Jefferson County, with about 1 in 10 homes empty in the city of Port Townsend and upwards of 5 in 10 in Brennan. So it's not that we don't have housing exactly, nor that houses are not being built. Try calling a contractor these days and you might be put on a year-long waiting list. So while there are homes in our area and there are homes being built, how is it that housing is so scarce? The homes being built are largely custom homes, not being built for our local workforce earning local wages. And the existing empty homes are most commonly second homes held as investments, used occasionally by owners, and are not rented out to our workforce. So it's not exactly a supply and demand issue per se, but a distribution and wealth issue. It's also important to say here that it has become harder for local contractors to make what we would consider an affordable home pencil out as the cost of land increases, as well as cost of labor and materials. There is just a lack of supply in terms of newer built smaller, naturally affordable homes in Jefferson County. Home prices in 2021 broke records across our county. Median home prices even jumped 19% nationwide in 2021. That means from the beginning of the pandemic to now, an average home in our area will be valued about $120,000 more simply for existing. This inflated value is being driven by competitive buying practices by individuals and investment trusts, often anchored in wealth from an even higher cost housing market. What is an affordable price to some is laughable for others. This results in local folks either being priced out from renting or buying, or not coming here at all to sustain our community and economy. So what can be done to address this disparity? HSN, or Housing Solutions Network, assembled five housing solutions which are designed to be leveraged by existing homeowners as options that can both satisfy their needs and those of our workforce. HSN has created expansive resources to support solutions such as creating ADUs, also known as backyard cottages or mother-in-law suites, as well as guides to home sharing, permitting, leasing land for tiny homes, and for filling those empty houses. I sought out two distinctly local perspectives to talk to about our ongoing housing issues. The first guest is one of our new esteemed city council members, freshly voted in this fall, Aislinn Diamante. I got to know Aislinn when all of the city council candidates banded together to host a housing forum that Housing Solutions Network co-hosted last summer. I've found that she has a mind for seeing what could be possible and a natural commitment to making things happen. Aislinn has served on Port Townsend's Planning Commission, as well as on the board of Habitat for Humanity and the Chamber of Commerce. Our other guest is our fire chief, Brett Black, also recently coming into his role in our community. Chief Black has been in the fire service for nearly 30 years, with many years dedicated to fighting wildfires in California. I first heard Chief Black's story on KPTZ and was intrigued to reach out and include his frontline perspectives in this interview. I noticed that Chief Black is able to speak to the housing issue from the perspective of being a key emergency responder in the entire region, and that inevitably carries weight. Local employers like East Jefferson Fire and Rescue are on the immediate receiving end of our workforce housing drain, which then quickly ripples out to our broader community. I'm very pleased to have them both here today to share their stories. My first question is for Aislinn. Aislinn, I'm curious, what brought you to Jefferson County and what has your experience of housing been here so far?
Thanks, Kellen. So I came out to Jefferson County. I had been volunteering out here through the Maritime Center and my past work in maritime nonprofits, but then I was hired to launch Bayside Housing at the old alcohol plant. So I moved out here in January of 2016, and I was able to do that because that job was able to provide transition housing for me, right? So I was able to live on site for the first 6 months while I was apartment hunting. So there's one key in why I was able to make this move and why a lot of other people aren't, right? And so then I, you know, tried to find a place, which was very difficult. And I even had already known some people in the area, but I was able to rent a condo from some people. And I was so lucky, basically, in what happened with that whole situation. They were the best landlords I've ever had. They had inherited that unit from one of their parents, and they purposefully keep the rent of that unit manageable. So I have very reasonable rent for a, you know, small two-bedroom, but, you know, decent place to live. And I was able to live there for 4.5 years. And so because they purposefully charged under market rate, my now husband and I were able to also at that time save. One of the things that we focused on when we were house shopping is having space for others as well. so that we could have more people living in this house than just us was important. And we were able to pull that off. So
yeah,
that's my housing story.
Yeah, there's so much in there that I want to return to. Yeah. It's so important to recognize that it takes people caring to really get established here. But I want to bring in Chief Black with the same question, really, of, you know, what brought you and your family to this area? And what has your experience of housing been in Jefferson County so far?
About a year and a half ago, my wife and I found ourselves in the San Francisco Bay Area and the East Bay in the Oakland area, working and living in a very densely populated area with a lot of metropolitan issues that are similar to Tacoma and Seattle and others in the region. So we kind of had a family realization that maybe that we're all due for a change. And I found this opportunity up here right about April or May in 2020 and decided that's it. We were already locked down for months. At that point, we were pretty aggressive in that region of California with the lockdown and pandemic restrictions. So I said, we're taking a family trip. If for nothing else, we need this. It's for our mental health. And it was one of the few allowable travel restrictions was for recruitment. We came up here and that was it. We all fell in love with their region for different reasons. So there were a lot of professional challenges that really drew my wife and I both to the area. And, you know, what's not to love about the nature and the community? You know, the housing element, I could say I probably have two different perspectives and experiences. One is the personal and the other is the professional. On the personal side, beyond the initial landing, you know, we bid on numerous houses to try to, you know, buy homes, but we were seeing, you know, close to San Francisco Bay Area prices, which is not conducive. So, and then with a few that we could find and afford, we were quickly outbid, sometimes within just an hour or so. And that became very frustrating. So after a number of those experiences, we just kind of hit the pause button and let's find a long-term lease or rental. We lucked out, found a great rental in the Paradise Bay area, which is where we live now. We've done nationwide recruitments for paramedics, EMTs, firefighters, and we're only getting a few applicants, but we were able to attract one from North Carolina, one from Arkansas. And that was their first question is, how's the housing out there? And right away, they're like, oh my gosh, we ended up losing a candidate who came here for a few months, moved his whole family. I think he had teenage daughters and then couldn't find housing for three counties. He was commuting from Kent as a paramedic and ended up going back just a few weeks ago. So housing is a huge challenge and disincentive for people to come and work here in our community, the lack of access to housing specifically. And I don't see it changing. It's going to continue to be a challenge.
That's stark to hear that. And those are the kinds of stories that I hear often and I want to share with people, not to depress them, but to have us realize that it is that bad and that without people taking the initiative to care and have an ADU, to use their ADU so that we can have a fire chief or anyone else here is just, it's a necessary step. What I underline there too is that the prices in the Bay Area, you're finding, you know, comparable to Jefferson County. I think that's really important for people to realize that we are at that point.
I'm paying the exact same rent that I was paying in the Bay Area per month.
That's incredible and tragic. So Aislinn, as you've been looking at housing through the planning side and being involved, obviously, with Bayside housing, there's certain narratives that are well-worn about what's going on or what people think of when they think of who needs housing. It tends often to focus on transitional housing. And from my experience, that's actually a minority of the housing issue here, but it's an obvious and dramatic housing experience. So it gets a lot of attention and rightly so. But I think there are other narratives happening and I'm wondering what you feel gets missed.
So I want to make one point just that is really clear to me as we're talking and just put it out there that I want to acknowledge that right now we're getting the perspectives of two people who relocated here, right? And there are people who are from here who are experiencing the same housing issues and it getting worse and worse and feeling pushed out of their homes. I think that what a lot of people don't understand is when you see an increase in homelessness and people who are needing those transitional type services, it's be often very directly tied to the constraints of housing throughout the echelons of, you know, what's available. So because it's so tight and so hard for people who used to be okay, you know, people who have relatively, you know, medium paying jobs who didn't have these same issues in sort of past or had fewer of them in past sort of economic situations, then it was easier for the people who have a lower income than that or other barriers to employment or barriers to stable housing to still stay housed. And so when those numbers raise, it's like because of stresses through the whole system. It's not suddenly there's way more people in crisis from their own reasons. They're in crisis because of systemic things that are happening to them, right? What gets missed and what I think the Housing Solutions Network has been doing a great job of trying to get this message out is that there are ways that individuals can help. When you have a problem like this that feels outside of what we feel like we have direct control over, it can feel easy to be like, oh, well, you know, throw your hands up. There's nothing to be done. However, we can do some things that ourselves to help this issue. And we need to work harder to make some of the changes that make doing things ourselves easier too, right? So I think obviously as a now member of a local government, there's ways to look at how our local government works on these issues.
Absolutely. I think the one of the common narratives again is, you know, why isn't the government, capital G government, doing something? Why isn't the city doing something? And we have to recognize that the city has a menu of policies it could change or work with, but they're not in the business of building houses. They're not controlling the marketplace. There's other places where people are responsible that goes outside of government, that goes outside of realtors, of like who these common, you know, kind of scapegoats tend to be. And realtors have responsibility, government has responsibility, nonprofits and individuals have responsibility. Individual homeowners are the most able to do immediate housing solutions. It's amazing. And it's not free. It costs money and it's not going to be for everyone. That's so much of our work. And I'm so glad you bring it up. But while we're on that government side, I'm curious if there's some housing policies, maybe even that we talked about at the Housing Forum this past summer or stuff that you've been looking at since, that you're excited to dig deeper into now that you're on Port Townsend's City Council.
Yeah, thanks. I think it's really important that we get rid of single family zoning, to come right out there and say that. And I know that will raise up there. A lot of people get concerned when you start having that conversation. But the first answer to those concerns is that a market demand for single family housing will continue. And so they won't go away. And then the protection of the character of our area and the worry for losing some of the older homes. Ultimately, if we made it easier to build more densely, that is one of the quickest ways from the government perspective that we can incentivize more housing being built when that's what we so desperately need.
Right. It's the least cost way of doing it too. If you already have the developed land, you're not spreading out, cutting down more trees, trenching and putting in sewer and water and electric. It's already developed.
Yeah. Right. That's the other thing where I see the city can take a leadership role is in the infrastructure piece. And of course, that's one of the most expensive ways to participate in this, but it's also one of the biggest barriers to many for building is, you know, we have some strange old systems in this city and we have weird pockets where there aren't services available. And where there's also now an overlay of laws that require you to either be tied into those services or to have a very expensive alternative to those services by digging like your own septic and well and things like that, right? And so I think the city took great leadership with the Rainier, the sub-area plan, and creating more developable land, and that is one of the most effective places to continue to focus that type of energy, is to give making sure there are more places that people can build out having to shoulder the full cost of it just on their own. I think we also know that a safer neighborhood, a desirable neighborhood, is more walkable and is more closely dense. Like, you look at downtown, the thing that we have, you know, that's our, like, one of our main draws, right, is how, like, beautiful that is. No codes would allow any of those buildings to be built right now. Yeah, and then there's some smarts to that, especially from the fire prevention perspective, I bet. But then there's also, it's like, okay, if this is the thing we cherish so much and it's illegal now, why have we done that? Why do we need to take a look at how to re-legalize the types of housing that we actually desire to have?
It's the ultimate irony is that the places that we are so beloved in this town and around the world really would never be built now. And I think that's on us to recognize. And so I'm curious to jump over to Chief Black here, ask you about, you know, the vulnerabilities that you have noticed or are perceiving or anticipating from the lack of workforce housing for first responders in particular.
Yeah, thank you. For that prompt. And I think one of the important issues to remember is the delineation for a frontline worker compared to, you know, just retail worker or blue collar workforce. They're all important. I mean, you know, everybody pays taxes and supports the community we live in, but the frontline worker is very much named that for an explicit reason. And a frontline worker, it would be your firefighter, your police officer, your paramedic, your nurse, because that position can't go vacant. If one of those people, you know, can't work that day because they're sick or they have a family issue, or they have to move on to another job to go somewhere else to find housing, we still have to fill that position. You can't not have a certain number of police officers on duty overnight. You can't not have a fire station staffed overnight. So that's where that term frontline worker comes in. And I think it's important to kind of for your audience to understand how critical that is. And especially in a remote community like Jefferson County, we rely on people to respond to greater alarms or greater instances of emergencies when they're off duty to a large degree, and having them available to reach out and grab them for, you know, a structure fire, for a wind event, for a storm or some other catastrophe is part of our plan. That is part of our response plan. And when they live across a bridge that is not tenuous in a storm or could be knocked out in an earthquake or tsunami, that poses an immediate issue to how we're going to be able to cope with a significant large scale event. But that ability to have what we would call depth in our bench is very tenuous. And it's all hinged on those frontline workers living and residing in the community that they work in. And that's how we manage with such a slim workforce. This is not just a new transplant issue like myself and her. I hear from my people on a regular basis that, you know, they started here when they were in their 20s and now they're getting married and getting relationships and a family and they can't find housing. So they're having to move 2-3 counties away. Or the other paradigm is they're now tasked with, you know, trying to care for a parent or grandparent that can't find appropriate senior housing. That paradigm doesn't just affect new people that are, you know, the poor Californian coming here, can't find a place to live. It affects all of us on a regular basis. So I'm really glad the council member brought that up. And the last thing I'll add to that is we respond to about 5,000 calls per year in our district. Most emergencies are, I would say easily half are at somebody's home. We're going into thousands of homes every year, and we're seeing change in the number of generations that are crammed into, you know, small quarters. So this isn't just a frontline worker issue. It is the most acute just because that's where I see it. And it is acute for the reasons I mentioned, but I think the community at large is seeing this paradigm as well.
Yeah. Thank you, Chief Black, for humanizing that side of things. I don't want to lose that component in these conversations about housing. And I'll just close here by saying that Housing Solutions Network is pulling in stories like this all the time. And we are constantly working across the community to try and develop realistic and creative solutions. We do have developed land. We do have developed housing. And, you know, even the extra bedrooms in our community that are going very underutilized. HSN is all about connecting people to resources. So if there are folks listening that have second homes, that have ADUs or want to build an ADU, would like to home share, anything like that, we are the people to talk to. You can send us your random, very unique question, and we will do our very best to give you a personal answer. Please do reach out to housingsolutionsnetwork.org for any questions, any curiosities. We have so many resources on our website. You can email us if you don't find the information that you're looking for. Just go to housingsolutionsnetwork.org. So with that, I just want to thank Chief Black and Aislinn Diamante once again. Really appreciate both of your perspectives being unique and well thought out. You're both critical thinkers, and I'm so glad to have you in our community. For attention, please, I'm Kellen Lynch from Housing Solutions Network.
KPTZ and the Attention Please team thanks Kellen Lynch for producing this show about Housing Solutions Network. Attention Please airs every Monday at noon and 5 o'clock, and also on Saturdays at noon. We bring Attention Please to you to draw your attention to important organizations and individuals whose good work adds to the resilience of our community. Attention Please is produced by a team of hosts, including Larry Stein, Steve Evans, occasional guest host, and myself, Phil Andrus. If you think you might want to learn how to be an Attention Please producer, write to me at cats@kptz.org. Thank you for listening, and let us know what your thoughts are on housing in Jefferson County by writing to the same email address, cats@kptz.org.